security. Can't rid myself of jealousy.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, and a wine bar. Charcuterie and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. and to 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468. So again, this is Love in the 21st Century, and we have Steve Behrman with us, and we will be discussing how to end jealousy permanently. I am thrilled to have Steve on the show. I am currently a participant in his year-long interchange counseling and coaching program in San Francisco. His teachings on counseling, healing, and personal growth have been powerful and life-changing for me. So, Steve, I am so excited to hear what you have to say on ending jealousy.
Hey there. Thanks so much for having me on your show, Jonah.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. So, for me, I've struggled with jealousy. And I've generally had the idea that it was just something I had to learn to deal with, that I either stay single or do everything I can to keep my partner from doing anything to set it off in me, or simply learning to tolerate it. The thought of actually being able to rid myself of jealousy permanently sounds amazing. So I'd love to start by asking, how do you define jealousy?
That's a good question. I have done whatever I can to try to avoid defining things like that. And instead, I usually ask people to tell me about experiences they've had, and I say, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But I'll give you a my most basic version of it, which is that we're talking about something that happens in relationships where you are in some kind of relationship with somebody, and they are in some way relating to somebody else, and you have a series of not just feelings, but also unpleasant thoughts and reactions to how they relate to the other person. Now, there's all kinds of things besides jealousy that could also fit that definition.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
I'm using that definition to distinguish it from envy, which is related, but, it's like if you and I are in a relationship and, I notice you having a really intimate conversation with somebody else, I might feel something that I'm calling jealousy because, I wish you were having that intimate conversation with me, or I'm afraid because you're having that intimate conversation with them that means something about that you won't want me, or I'm afraid that I might lose you, which is different from, I notice you have a really nice pair of sneakers, and I wish I had those sneakers, and, feel envy that you somehow managed to get a hold of them and I didn't. So envy may be about things. It may be about some, ability that you have that I don't, or a job that you have that I don't, whereas jealousy is always about relationships. So that's at least the beginning of a distinction. But there's a reason, and I'll talk about it in a little bit, why I don't actually try to define it exactly. But I'm wondering if, for your purposes, that's enough of a place to start from.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. And it sounds like the key there is that it generally has something to do with a relationship with another person and the actions.
Yeah, a relationship with another person and their relationship with somebody else.
Their relationship with somebody else.
And
right.
the negative feelings and reactions that come from those other
yes.
relationships.
Yes.
Yes, for sure. And, and the reason why, we can sort of say the negative feelings and reactions is because those take many different forms. And it turns out, if you ask a lot of people to describe to you their experiences of jealousy, everyone knows what it is. Everyone has their own intuitive understanding of it. If you ask them to describe their experiences, you get really different kinds of experiences, different emotions, different thoughts that people have. Somehow they all get put together under this umbrella term of jealousy. And that's the curious thing about it. That is why it's something that is possible to end permanently. If we're talking about sadness, we're talking about shame or anger or fear, a number of other kinds of core challenging emotions, aversive emotional experiences that humans have. Those are not things that I think you can get rid of. I think they're fundamental aspects of the human experience. And often, feeling those feelings means that you are being responsive to what's happening around you. You're responding to life in a way that makes you more alive. It may be painful, but it makes you more alive. Those are real feelings. They're fundamental feelings. Jealousy is not actually a feeling. There's no feeling of jealousy. It doesn't have its own distinct emotional state. It's just a mixture of those other feelings along with some other stuff. And rather than talking about what that other stuff is, I'll just say, for now, that's why jealousy is something that it's possible to end. It's a much more complex construction than a fundamental emotion. Fundamental emotions, for better or worse, we are stuck with, and they all have very positive functions to play, even if they're challenging experiences to endure.
I see. Yeah. So I'm thinking of a time recently where I described myself as feeling jealous. I was at a party with my girlfriend, and she was sitting next to, I was on one side, and she was sitting next to this guy on the other side. And there was a couple moments where I noticed her just kind of like smiling and jabbing him with her elbow. And I didn't know what was going on, but I had this response, and I would say there was some adrenaline and some fear, and at the time I labeled it as jealousy. But I think, if I'm understanding what you're saying, is that jealousy is kind of like a label that I'm just covering over the feelings that were coming up, which were more like just fear or insecurity. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, jealousy is definitely a label, clearly, and fear and insecurity are also labels. Maybe I can back up a little bit, because the label question is a really important question if you're interested in ending jealousy. And there are a couple of concepts that may be useful to have as a sort of a foundation before tackling this question of what, why do you use that label and what use is it? And so the first is this notion just that we have a very strong active role to play in organizing our own experience. It's never the case that something just happens and you have a direct experience of what happens. You and I are having the same experience, you know, we're in the same room, the same thing is going on, but what it means to you and what it means to me, how I feel about it, how you feel about it, whether you care about it, whether I care about it, may be totally different. Because you and I are organizing our experience differently. We're making different meaning out of the same things because of our different backgrounds and our different values and priorities, and because of the assumptions we make about how the world works. And we're also organizing our experience differently just because, you know, we have just learned to focus on different things. You know, somebody else sitting there in that same moment, you know, with their girlfriend might not have even noticed that that was happening. They might not have even registered that it was occurring, not because they're oblivious or ignoring her, but because it just would seem to them like, oh, they're just having fun and my focus is elsewhere. And so part of what we're interested in is noticing how you have an active role, we all have an active role in organizing our own experience. One of the ways that we do that is by adding meaning to things. Now, if you have a feeling just like fear, you know, so you're in this moment and you notice, who knows why this happens, but your girlfriend is having fun with elbowing, playing with the guy next to her, and suddenly this fear occurs to you. You know why fear is happening. It's just fear. It's just a simple emotion. If you could just notice it as, you know, I don't know, how do you experience fear? Is it tension in your body? Did your breathing constrict? You said some adrenaline, so.
Yeah, I would say at that moment it was like, yeah, a constriction, probably in like my chest, and then just thoughts, like thoughts, like that she's, no, it's hard to say, like something about maybe she's like, I'm not good enough, or I'm gonna be replaced, but that's not even,
and yeah. So what I'm hearing though is that you want to check in with your, like, the physiological responses that you're having in that moment, right, so that you can determine what of those base emotions or those primary emotions
yeah,
that you're
I mean
feeling.
That's just a good thing to be able to do, period, in general. If you want to have some kind of mastery over emotions, which again doesn't mean that you stop feeling stuff, because it's just part of being human to feel things. It might mean that you feel things even more fully. But if you want to have some mastery over your emotions, you have to be able to pay attention to, when you have an emotion, what's actually happening. Like, you know, a totally different response that you could have had, Jonah, in that moment, is you could have noticed this adrenaline rush, this fear that's happening in your body, and you could have just been, wow, you could have said, this is so interesting. Why would I be scared in this moment? I want to just study what's happening in my body. What's occurring right now? God, my heart's beating really fast, and I've started breathing in a really constricted way, and oh, I notice if I slow down my breathing, my heart rate slows down. It's almost as if somehow I just, like, something in my body was just protecting against the possibility of danger. And there's nothing dangerous happening. You could just be in this curious, interested process of studying it. No, I'm not saying that that's a better response than the one that you had. It's just a different response.
Yeah, well, it definitely sounds more fun.
It would probably be more interesting. It would be more growth-oriented, because you'd be interested in learning about your own emotions and how they work.
Yeah, well, and I think if I'm understanding what you were saying before, too, is that part of the thing around deconstructing jealousy is getting into the deeper question of why I had that reaction in the first place, which you said has to do with the meaning that I'm making of the situation.
Yeah, exactly, because if you're just feeling scared, you know, that's what I would call a painful emotion. Pain is inevitable. All kinds of things will cause us pain. So you're having this painful emotion, but then you add some meaning to it. Now, I don't know if you added this particular meaning to it, but it's very common, if someone is scared, for them to, at the same time as they're feeling scared, add the meaning to the experience, I shouldn't be scared right now. And for whatever reason, you know, you think it's not okay for you to feel scared. Anyone who has social anxiety, you know, is typically having that experience. They're feeling scared, and they're also telling themselves that it's bad for them to be feeling scared.
Yeah, I was doing that.
Right, so that's and maybe other things too, but at least that,
I didn't want to be feeling
that. As soon as you do that, as soon as you add that meaning to it, you have transmuted this experience of pain into an experience of suffering. And those are not the same thing. Suffering is what happens when you take pain and you add meaning to it that kind of traps the feeling in place. Suffering is like feelings trapped behind a wall of meaning. And, you know, it's kind of like if you could imagine, just to take a situation that's not yours, you know, if someone close to you were to die and you were to feel grief about it, that's just a natural response. You've lost somebody and so you feel grief, and that might take the form of crying. It would just, the energy and the emotion of it would just move through you if you let it. But if you had the idea somehow that, you know, them dying was your fault, you didn't love them enough, or like you felt with the fear, like, oh, I shouldn't feel so strongly about this, I should get over it, what's my problem? Those kinds of thoughts, those kinds of meanings that you're adding to the grief can actually stop you from grieving.
Mm-hmm.
It can actually stop you from allowing this natural process of the feeling just moving through you and out of you and just doing its thing, whatever it is that feelings do. So suffering is this addition of meaning to feelings, but not just any meaning. It's an addition of meaning that actually kind of freezes the thing in place. And so, you know, I could imagine you in that moment. You know, one of many ways you could do this, you could have just said out loud to your girlfriend and the guy next to her, whomever else is around, like, whoa, I just got scared. I don't know what that was. Woo! And then you kind of shake it out. And that would be just letting the thing move through you, expressing it and letting it happen. And that would be really different from then kind of trapping it in place. When you trap it in place, it can kind of hang around forever. It doesn't ever move through you. It's like trapped in you like a whirlpool rather than passing over you like a wave.
If you resist, it will persist.
Totally. Yes, if you resist. And it's a funny thing. You know, you would think, why would we resist that? It's like if resisting it causes it to stick around, why would you do it? Well, there's just some way that we've gotten things hooked up where we have the sense, and there's historical reasons in everyone's history why you have this sense, but you have the sense that it's just too much. You can't handle feeling the feeling. Nobody likes pain or fear. You don't want to have to experience those things. So this notion that you can kind of do something to manage it or make meaning out of it that allows you to avoid it, and it does. You totally avoid it in the moment. But it means that it's you have a far worse experience because it lasts far longer. And so for everybody, learning to let feelings move is the key thing to do in order to heal old hurts and to you know, manage the overwhelm of just how hard it is to be a person.
This is exactly
not just about jealousy. It's about almost anything.
Yeah,
it's a key thing to be able to do, and I'm taking the time now to kind of fixate on it before talking about the meanings that we make that cause this experience that we call jealousy, because it's actually a really key thing. You can't just think your way out of jealousy. You can't think your way out of any entrenched, challenging experience. Learning to understand your thoughts and your beliefs and the meaning you're making is a part of the process, but learning to allow feelings to move and to allow the sensations that are happening in your body along with those feelings to occur is also essential to being able to you know, move something like jealousy if it's been around for a long time in your life. So we've got this notion that you are somehow actively organizing your experience, and that one of the ways you're doing that is you're adding meaning to your feelings. And we can look at why those particular meanings. But somehow the sum total of all that, the feelings you're feeling and the thoughts that you're thinking about them and the sensations in your body, the circumstances around you, how you choose to behave in response to it, that whole thing you are wrapping in this package, and then you're slapping the word jealousy on the package. And the reason why the label matters is because labeling something, naming something, frames that thing. It's like there's this really complex experience happening. I mean, you just named it and it sounds really simple. I was sitting there at a party, my girlfriend is next to me, she's having fun with the guy next to her. But actually, there's tremendous complexity in what's happening there. know, what is your relationship with your girlfriend like? What does it mean to you to be there with her? What does it mean for her to have the connection she has with this other guy? How do you feel about him? So many things are happening there. It's really complex. And if you take this word jealousy and you say, oh, what happened in that moment, you got scared while that was happening, it was jealousy, you're putting a frame around the experience. And the frame is highlighting certain aspects of the experience and totally ignoring everything that falls outside of the frame. And we just assume, oh, this is jealousy. I know what this is, and then label it. And then at that moment, typically, we stop paying attention to all the complex things that are happening in that moment. And all of those complex things are what you need to be able to pay attention to in order to do something with what you're calling jealousy. Once you call it jealousy, it like freezes the whole thing in place in this frame. You think you know what's happening, but you haven't actually taken the time to unpack it, to like pop the hood and see what's under there. And so one of the first things that I have people do, if you're interested in ending jealousy permanently, is to really consider not using the word jealousy anymore. Not using the label. And this sounds kind of like a trick. It is a trick, but it's not just a trick. Because if you stop using the word jealousy, you can't be jealous anymore. It's just not what's happening. Something's still happening, and you may still really not like the thing that's happening. But it's no longer jealousy. You're not calling it that. Instead, you have to try to figure out what actually is going on right now. What is this experience made of? And for you in that moment, the experience is made of some adrenaline, some fear, maybe some thoughts like, what did you say those thoughts were? Something about you, some sense of you might lose her or...
Yeah,
like him better.
I don't know. I mean, I was kind of digging for that.
Yeah, maybe those weren't actually happening. Maybe it was a relatively minor episode of jealousy, not enough to trigger those kinds of thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite that extreme, but I think I liked what you said about the social anxiety thing. There was definitely a sense of like, oh, this shouldn't be happening. I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah.
I'm already around a lot of people, and now I'm having these feelings.
I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to look.
Yeah, what's she going to say if I tell her that I just had feelings about seeing that? That's probably what was going on.
Right. So on a very basic level, it's like there's something about how you're having an experience that's challenging for you. It might be nice if she was in on it with you.
Uh-huh.
Like, maybe if you weren't alone with it, and she could be kind of in on it, she could actually help you make sense of it. Or it would alleviate the feeling of tension in your system that comes from, already feeling socially overwhelmed and not knowing what to do, not wanting to embarrass yourself. There's this shame, there's this tension. It might be alleviated if somehow she was able to be in on it with you, but instead you were feeling alone.
Yeah.
You were separate from her, and you're actually making yourself alone.
Right.
I mean, not to say that you didn't have good reasons for that, but it's a habit that you've learned, and in order to let her in on it or tell her something about it, you would have to take a risk, and that risk is scary. Maybe you don't have a sense of trust. Maybe there's not the kind of intimacy established between the two of you. I don't know your girlfriend or anything about your relationship, so I don't mean to suggest this is true about the two of you. But maybe there's not the kind of closeness there that would make it possible for you to be able to just share with her something that's shameful and trust that she'd be able to hold you in it and not make you feel worse, for instance.
I'm wondering how you would do that when you're in a public setting, though. Do you just like say, hey, can I talk to you for a second? Or do you just like say it out loud?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you feel about public settings or people or conversations, but from my experience is that, you know, most conversations that happen between people at parties are not that interesting to me. Small talk, I don't find particularly exciting, and I've never met anybody who does.
Yeah,
I've never met somebody who says, oh, you know what I could use in my life? More small talk. That really gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most people really wish for more meaningful contact and more meaningful interactions. In particular, an environment like a party, the only reason people go to parties is to have contact with each other. You know, otherwise you just stay at home. So people are wanting to have real experiences together, and yet we have so many barriers against being real with each other. And so how do you do it in a public setting? You have to be willing to be vulnerable. Mm. You have to be willing to risk exposing something about yourself that other people might or might not be able to get. They might or might not be kind in response. That's why it's vulnerability. Vulnerability mm-hmm. is, by its very nature, risky. Mm-hmm. You're giving somebody else the chance to hurt you if they want to. You're not protecting yourself against it. But vulnerability turns out to be not only a key to everybody getting more of what they want, because people want more real, complete contact with each other, but it's also a key to one of the places where meaning gets added to feelings to create this experience that we have been calling jealousy. Now, of course, I'm inviting you not to use that word anymore. And for some people, as soon as they stop using the word, it changes the whole thing for them. And we'll talk about, what is actually happening when you really notice all the things that are going on when you stop using the word.
So, but a reminder that you are listening to KZFR, and this is Love in the 21st Century, and we are with Steve Behrman from the Interchange Counseling Institute talking about ending jealousy permanently.
Cool. Thanks, Jonah.
Yeah. And so
there you are in a moment with your girlfriend at a party having a minor episode of what you've been calling jealousy, and there's some fear involved, and there's also some not fully formed thoughts, but some sense at least, some belief somewhere that you can't tell her what's happening, that you're on your own. There's this sense of separateness, and it comes from this kind of habitual lack of intimacy that exists in most of our relationships, most places. And so, as a result, there's this sense of scarcity that most of us have about having the amount of closeness that we wish we had in our lives. We all have a tremendous need for close, intimate contact with people. And this doesn't have to mean sexual or romantic contact. You may be somebody who is, well ensconced in a long-term monogamous relationship, but no matter how close you are with that person, we actually all have a great need for many different kinds of closeness with many different people.
So connectedness is what you're talking about, essentially.
Yeah, like I'm talking about intimacy. The feeling of connectedness. Tell me if this matches your experience, but for me, if I'm trying to be real, if I'm showing my real self, being vulnerable, like mm-hmm. we were talking about, and giving somebody a chance to see what I'm really like, and at the same time, they're doing their best to show me their real selves, and I'm doing my best to see them clearly. I'm trying to get what it's like for you to be you, and I kind of am starting to get it, and you can tell that I'm getting it, mm-hmm. and you're getting what it's like for me to be me, and I can tell that you're getting it. Now we're connected.
Right.
That is what makes that's what intimacy is. Mm-hmm. It's what makes intimacy possible. And there's a lot of trust that tends to go along with it, because if I think that you really get me, then I'll tend to trust that, when I share with you about things that are hard for me, like, mm-hmm. oh gosh, I got scared in this moment. I don't even know why. I'm anxious, and maybe I could use a hand with it from you. I'll trust that you will be able to respond in a way that comes from caring about me, because you get what it's like for me to be me. You get what my struggles are. So connectedness, closeness, intimacy. Intimacy is a term that I tend to use, but call it what you will. We all need a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us, unfortunately, only really ever managed to create that with one person. And so if you've got just a single person in your life, and that's the only person who you really feel like you can fully be yourself with, maybe the only person you can really rest with, because everybody else, you have to try hard, you have to prove yourself, you think you have to be the way they want you to be in order to get them to like you. Something, some effort, some energy that's always going into all of your interactions with people, even if it's subtle, it's just happening all the time. For people who are introverts, that's exhausting. Putting out that kind of effort, can often really deplete them. And so maybe there's only one person who you really can just let down all those masks. You have to perform, you have to try, you can just be yourself with them. Then, if that person is elbowing the person next to them and having fun with them, you know, now there's a threat. Mm. There's a sense of like, oh no, what am I going to do? This is my one person. And now I don't have them. Now I'm on my own. Because she's now having this positive interaction with somebody else that she seems to be liking, and I can't even provide that kind of interaction with her now if I want to, because I'm caught up in some feelings of anxiety. I'm probably not going to be very fun at the moment.
I have a question.
With somebody else, now maybe I'm going to be on my own for the rest of my life. Now, you don't really have that thought, you know, I'm going to be on my own for the rest of my life. But on a feeling level, it's like that. Such a core feeling experience. But it comes from this belief that you only have her. And that belief is what keeps you from, in the moment, just turning to both of them and saying, you know, wow, you guys seem to be having fun. I'm sorry to interrupt it. I'm like having this total weird anxiety response. And, you know, can I share with you about it? Would it be cool if we just all, you know, kind of took it on together? That would be a really interesting experience. Most people don't have at parties. I think great for everybody. More interesting than most of what people do at parties. But it would be a real challenge for you to do. You would have to have the sense that you could have that kind of intimacy or closeness with this stranger who's sitting on the other side of your girlfriend or whomever is around at the party. And that is something that you can actually develop. That's something that you can learn to develop in your life. You can start to have more and different kinds of close relationships with more people than you've ever had before. And to the extent that you do that, you are making new kinds of meanings. The system of scarcity, which is one of four fundamental kinds of meanings that people give to their experiences that seem to accompany jealousy, quote-unquote, this sense of scarcity really, you know, evaporates when you counter it by learning to create realness and intimacy with all kinds of people in all kinds of ways, you know, many different flavors of intimacy. It's not the same risk anymore. You know, your girlfriend's temporarily unavailable because she's interacting with somebody else. That doesn't matter as much. You have other people. You can turn to maybe a stranger, or you also know that you just have other people in your life that you can turn to. If you did lose her, you would know that you had a supportive network of friends to fall back on. You know, you wouldn't be left on your own. You would have real closeness of other forms elsewhere.
Would you say that this negative meaning that we set to these certain contexts, they come from old schemas that we pick up as we're growing up? So what's really resonating for me is that when I feel jealousy, oftentimes it has to do with growing up in an environment where I didn't feel like, A, I could be myself, and B, that you know, my parents per se weren't as consistent with loving and supporting me. And so I think that oftentimes I transfer that onto intimate partner relationships, and therefore when things like Jonah's just talking about now happen, it triggers me to feel quote unquote jealousy or those negative emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, not only have you had that personal set of experiences in your life, but you've grown up in a society where there's just a, you know, a general practice of faking it.
Yeah.
You know, like we walk around saying, hey, how you doing? And the answer is always just some bullshit. You know, it's fine. I'm totally fine. Or you just don't really answer. You don't tell people what's really going on for you. People don't really want to know.
Right.
We stay on the surface with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Just growing up having that modeled for you everywhere, that's another source of the schema that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily just because of your personal experiences, although personal experiences are certainly a powerful source of the schema that you develop.
So it's reinforced by this social constructs that that I surround myself with in my life, essentially.
Yeah, and so now what you've got is not only this, like, how this sort of something you didn't get from your parents. They didn't show you what it's like to have this kind of consistent love and support, or somebody really getting what it's like for you to be you. You didn't get that kind of intimacy in the way that you might have needed to just have a secure sense, like, oh, that's something you were able to create anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, maybe along the same lines at the same time, were learning that there's something about you that wasn't okay.
That's just what my therapist said yesterday morning.
Funny that.
It's
And so that's true about you, and you know, and a great insight that your therapist had or that you came up with together. But it's also just so much of how it goes for people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're learning that it's not okay for you to be because there's something about you that's not okay. Something's wrong with you. And that is another one of these key fundamental areas that in these experiences that we've come to call jealousy gets triggered. Mm-hmm. This experience of insecurity, the sense of there's something wrong with me, you know, why will this person that I love continue loving me when there's somebody else who's better? I'm comparing myself to them. I'm losing in the comparison.
Right.
Maybe it's a real person. Maybe it's an imaginary person. I don't know.
So do you
one thing that's been really curious to me about teaching these ending jealousy workshops for a number of years is that I get such a mix of people who have different kinds of relationship styles. You know, so people who are in very traditional kinds of monogamous relationships, and then people who are kind of way out on the edge of having alternative polyamorous or non-monogamous relationships. And it doesn't really matter. Everybody experiences this jealousy business the same way. There's different things that evoke it. You know, it may be that, you know, your jealousy is evoked by, you know, your girlfriend is having a moment of close contact with somebody at a party, you know, and it just seems like they're having fun together. Or it may be that, you know, your jealousy is evoked because your partner had sex with somebody else on Valentine's Day, and normally it would be fine for them to have sex with somebody else because that's what you do in your open relationship, but Valentine's Day is supposed to be your day and it's just for you. Now, so the people have edges in very different places. Wherever the edge is, it's the same kind of experience that gets evoked, the same sort of meanings that get applied. And so whether you're comparing yourself with the person that your partner just had sex with, or you're comparing yourself with somebody at a party that they're just having fun with, it's still this comparison, and you're losing in the comparison. And so there's this sense, this belief that there's something wrong with you, this insecurity. And the insecurity is not something you made up. You know, like the schema that you're talking about that you've developed comes from somewhere. And it's so universal because we all growing up have grown up in environments where the adults around us were trying to control our behavior. It's just what we do as adults. You know, kids are just wild and unruly in various ways, and we try to make them how we want them to be. We want them both to be healthy members of our cultural communities, and we also want to try to get them to behave. And so one of the main ways that we get young people, and it turns out adults too, to act the way we want them to act is by making them feel bad about themselves for acting the way that they're acting that's different from how we want. And so we have these well-developed systems of making people feel bad about themselves in all kinds of ways, and we get that from really early on, and we internalize it, and we walk around feeling bad about ourselves and saying terrible things to ourselves as a result. It's like the worst things that anybody ever said to you growing up about, you know, that were meant to criticize you or insult you or shame you or make you feel bad, we do far worse to ourselves. Amazing what people say to themselves.
So if
you take those, you know, that sort of internal dialogue, the things that you say to yourself when you're feeling like there's something not okay about you, that insecurity, and you were to say those things to somebody else, right, instead of saying them to yourself, you were to say them to someone else that you care about, you would be horrified. You'd be like, I would never say those things to anybody else. I would never treat anybody else that way. But somehow you've learned to treat yourself that way. And so this is another one of these key areas where if you're interested in dismantling the meaning systems that comprise jealousy, you need not just to tackle scarcity and learn to create more intimacy in your life, but you need to tackle insecurity and learn to love yourself in ways that are way better than how a lot of us have learned to love ourselves.
So I'm taking notes here, and I've got a short little list of things. So it sounds like one of the first thing you were suggesting was to stop using the word jealousy even.
Yeah.
Like kind of like unravel the whole concept that jealousy is even really a thing. And then the second one is to get more intimacy in our lives, to acknowledge that we need more than one person, and to kind of break through our edges and make deeper connections with more people. And then this one you said is also then to love ourselves. Is that right?
Yes. So
I'm wondering, so what I'm hearing is that following that thread, right? That thread that goes back to those old schemas and those old messages that we pick up from our parents and the society that surrounds us is very essential in the idea or the concept of ridding oneself of jealousy. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like you could say jealousy is a side effect of our society.
Right.
And it's not just our society, it's our psychology, but there's really not a line between those two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we organize ourselves in relationships and communities and organizations, institutions, has to do with how we make sense of the world inside ourselves and how we feel and how we work. And so we've created a whole social system where jealousy is a byproduct. And that social system gets internalized into the kinds of meanings we make and the ways that we behave because of those meanings. And then that leads to our personal experience of jealousy as a byproduct. And you can change all of those things. You can take each of those, recognize what you learned, and decide that there's a way to do it that you would like much better. And mostly when I talk to people about this and I say, hey, how about instead of being, you know, super hard on yourself and beating yourself up all the time, you could learn to love yourself better. Which would you prefer? People would certainly prefer to love themselves better. They don't necessarily know how to do that. Mm-hmm. They have to learn how to do that, and there are ways to do that,
mm-hmm.
and I can talk about them. But it's preferable. It's what people actually want. You just got given this one way of doing things, and there's a way better way of doing things, and you start to change that in yourself. It changes how you feel because it changes the meaning you make about your experiences, and then it changes how you act, and then you're starting to be a representative of a new way of doing society, you know, a new way of creating community where jealousy is not a byproduct, not just for you, but also less so for the people around you, because you creating more intimacy in your life means all of those people also get more intimacy because they get to be close with you. You learning to love yourself better means that you will probably be more helpful in helping other people to do the same thing. And those make a huge difference. If you're interested in the permanently aspect of this, these permanently moments that happen for people sometimes when they take these workshops, the first of them comes from stopping using the word jealousy. The second, I sort of skipped over and maybe is worth backtracking to. And then the third comes from dismantling the meaning systems that you have, inadvertently picked up that create experiences that are not really the experiences we most want to have. And we've tackled two of those, insecurity and scarcity, and there's two others that we haven't, and those are codependency and victimhood, the sense of being a victim. We can touch on those as well. But maybe, if it's all right with you, can we backtrack and come back to meaning in a moment? Because there's something that happens when you stop using the word jealousy and you start paying attention to what's really happening that people start to notice, and it's really worth noticing. So maybe, even though it's a relatively minor episode and we've talked about it a lot already, Jonah, can I ask you to come back to this experience at the party with your girlfriend?
Definitely.
And tell me everything that you're aware that you were feeling. Maybe mostly just fear. But is there anything else that you know at that moment? You noticed her having fun with this guy. You felt scared. Is there anything else you were feeling?
I would say just a general discomfort in my body. I was sitting in a chair and... it's hard to say. It was a while ago. It was like a few weeks ago. So I would say the fear, other words that are like fear, like anxiety and...
Those are great. So some discomfort, fear and anxiety. I suspect there's something else that you were feeling that you're still not noticing because you're accustomed to interpreting your feelings in a particular way. You just put a frame around the experience.
Yeah.
So it's not like you were just sitting there alone feeling these things, right? You were feeling them in response to your girlfriend having this positive interaction with somebody else.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your girlfriend?
In general?
Yeah.
I'm in love with her.
Right.
I think she's great. I'm so appreciative.
Loaded question on the air.
It may not be that in that moment you were like just sitting there feeling in love. I mean, feelings you may actually be in love. But
yeah.
The feeling of having loving feelings, that comes and goes. You know, feelings displace each other all the time. But probably there's some general positive feeling that you're having toward her. There's some experience of loving her.
In that
if
moment.
If you didn't, it
yeah.
wouldn't matter what she was doing with that other guy.
Right. I could see that.
And so because that doesn't really fit in the jealousy frame, we tend to ignore it and disregard it. But it is always the case. If you are feeling jealous about somebody, it is because you love that person.
Right. Or it's like, I like it when she's interacting and flirting with me in that way, maybe. Like, I like that so much that when I saw her do it with him, there's...
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like you have some... Whether or not you're thinking this all through explicitly, you have some sense, some memory of like, oh, these are really good feelings that I've had with her that now she's having with somebody else. And so there's some awareness in you of this really positive connection with her that could exist or has existed in the past or that you want. Now, you can be jealous of, like, you know, your favorite celebrity that get, you know, married to somebody else, and now you're just terribly jealous because you're not going to get to be with that person. Of course, you were never going to get to be with them, nor have you ever met them. It's all imaginary.
Uh-huh.
You might not want to call that love, but it's something close to it. Even if you think it's just lust, there's something in lust that often is this quality of love. There's something about how we really feel about each other. This warmth that comes from really holding somebody in high regard and sensing this connection that you have to them. All these pieces of what makes love love. And so you're feeling love and feeling scared at the same time. And so it wasn't just that you were scared. You know, it's not that jealousy is just a negative experience. You're actually feeling something positive and something negative at the same time. It's like when you miss somebody. It's not, you know, usually you don't miss somebody because, you know, you don't care about them and they're gone and therefore you're sad. Usually you miss them because you have some awareness of loving them or some awareness of how much it means to you to be connected to them and noticing at the same time that they're not around. And those simultaneous feelings, one positive, one challenging, make for missing. And so same true here. You know, you just felt some love for your girlfriend and scared without even really processing the whole thing that maybe somehow you might lose in some competition with this other guy or you might lose her. And so that love is there, and once you start to notice it, it can really change your experience. It can change forever this experience of jealousy. It's always there, but it's in the background. And if you start to bring it to the foreground, you know, just think about any time you've been jealous and notice that there was some love happening there. And then even in the memory, you know, just like bring the awareness of the love that you felt into the foreground of the memory. Just make it more significant. Give it some, give it the weight that it deserves. Notice that it's essential. You wouldn't be feeling the hard stuff if you weren't feeling the love. And that starts to change things. And for some people, that changes it forever. It's like, oh my God, this whole time I've just been loving you. I've been loving you and scared. I've been loving you and feeling embarrassed. Or I've been loving you and feeling angry or sad.
So I want to...
piece that you get when you take the frame off and you start to notice all of what's really happening in the experience. Love is the thing that's happening.
So I'm curious. I've been... I'm loving everything that you're saying and finding it inspiring. And I am also curious, as a devil's advocate, because I'm sure some people may be thinking this, is
do you
see any value in the fact that, whether we call it jealousy or just fear, that maybe there's something actually that we benefit from, like it helps two people or a family bond by having these kind of like insecure or jealousy feelings when we worry that they'll stray or leave?
Yeah, sure. It totally does. It has a lot of function. Fear definitely does. You know, fear is a really valuable feeling to have. You know, it's alerting you that there's something that could be, you know, a danger or risk that then can allow you to pay more attention so that you can avoid, you know, something bad happening. So fear is really valuable, and could be that in a moment like that, it would be useful to be scared. But even the whole experience of insecurity that you might be having is useful. If your goal is to try to control the person to keep them with you. You know, keep that person from having a positive experience with somebody else, because if they do, they might like that person better because you think that person is better than you, and then you'd lose them. Then insecurity will really help you to do the things to them that were done to you that made you feel insecure in the first place. You do all kinds of things to control them, make them feel bad, get them to behave in ways that are good for you, whether or not they're good for them. Now, of course, as I'm saying all this, you're probably not thinking, that sounds great, that's a really positive function. But it is actually the way a lot of people structure their relationships. And it is actually functional, like you're saying. You know, it can actually protect the beauty and the uniqueness of your connection with somebody. But as you can tell from the way that I'm describing the functionality of that insecurity or scarcity, or codependency for that matter, I think there are much better ways to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, from the way you're describing it, it sounds very constricting and not very fun. Like if you're just trying to control each other or keep each other somehow constrained in a way, then...
Yeah, you're totally in love with your girlfriend. Do you not want her to get to have an enjoyable moment with, you know, a stranger at a party that she's having?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I do. And that was part of what I think, like, one of the original things you said was, like, oh, I had this feeling, and then I was like, well, gosh, I don't want to have this feeling because I want to support her in having fun and connecting with other people. And so here I am on a call trying to get rid of my jealousy. So you know, there's the layers of the things.
Yes, there's the layers of the thing. In actuality, you know, in great part because you care about her as much as you do, you want her to have positive experiences with other people. Especially given that that's an experience that probably is quite low risk. You know, it's not like letting her be playful with this other person who's sitting on the other side of her is actually threatening your relationship with her. It's just that you're scared. And you're scared because of, you know, maybe some way that you have a sense that she's the only person who you can be close with. I don't know really if that's true for you. The scarcity, maybe it's because you think that there's something about you that makes you not as desirable as this stranger. And if that's the case, then there's some things to learn to do about how to interrupt your own negative self-talk and replace it with the kinds of things that you would say to somebody else who is struggling. It's really amazing, you know, with this insecurity stuff, the extent to which we seem to believe that when someone's having a hard time, they deserve to be shamed and criticized. That's what we do to ourselves. And if it was somebody else you cared about having a hard time, you'd probably say sweet things to them. You'd give them some empathy and compassion, you know, some love, some reassurance. You would tell them what's great about them. And you could totally do the same thing to yourself. You can interrupt negative self-talk as soon as you notice it. You can develop a you know, a conscious practice of doing that and replace it with saying things to yourself that are caring, like you would say, you know, like you would say to your own child. You wouldn't want to say to your child the kinds of things you say to yourself when you're being hard on yourself. What you would say to them is something, you know, loving and gentle and patient, and you can give yourself that too.
Hey, Steve, I hate to stop you where you're at, but we are running out of time. We have about 2 minutes left. So is there anything that you would like to say to wrap up this beautiful conversation on how to rid yourself of jealousy?
Yes, and I'd also love to, if you have a moment, to share with the audience how they can get in touch with you or find or work with you in some way.
Yes, absolutely, to both of those. Thank you. So I think to wrap this up, I'll just say, you know, we're having a conversation together where we're starting to deconstruct something that's kind of complex. You know, it's just you've taken something for granted and called it jealousy, and we're starting to break it down and see what it's made of. I would not expect somebody listening to this conversation to necessarily be able to walk away and then just no longer be jealous because
we have about one more
it's a process. And, you know, even if I'm teaching, the short version of this class, you know, there's still, some experiences I take people through. There's some things that you have to do to get there. So I say this to invite you to not be hard on yourself if you don't find that this conversation has allowed you to free yourself permanently from jealousy. And if you notice that it has done something to shift something about how you're making sense of things, follow that, have a sense of that there's something starting, some process starting to unfold within you, and see if you can allow it to keep unfolding. Find out where it takes you. If you bring the love to the foreground, if you stop using the word jealousy, if you start to notice that, you believe there's only one person you can be close with and try to learn to be closer with others, or you start to notice how hard you're being on yourself and try to learn how to replace that with something else.
We have about 30 seconds.
Let that process unfold over time. And if you are interested in actually taking a day-long version of this Ending Jealousy Permanently workshop, I unfortunately do not have a date set yet, but I will be teaching one sometime in the next couple months at Home on Treasure Island, which is the campus where Interchange, my year-long counseling training, is taught, and where I teach other workshops and a number of other trainings and seminars happen as well. And so you can find out about that if you sign up on my mailing list at interchangecounseling.com. Just go to interchangecounseling.com and register for our list, for our newsletter. And you will not only find out when I'm teaching whatever classes I'm teaching, but you will be alerted whenever I post any articles or videos on my blog.
Okay, people, we need to discuss billboards. Yes, we really must. At best, these giant corporate placards are problematic. They garishly loom over us, clutter our landscapes, and intrude into our communities with no respect for local aesthetics or preferences. Now, however, billboards are getting a high-tech reboot, allowing advertisers to invade not only our places, but also our privacy. Having to see billboards everywhere is bad enough. Far worse, though, is that the modernized, digitalized, computerized structures can see you and track you. Clear Channel Outdoor Americas, having already splattered the country with tens of thousands of billboards, has revealed that it is partnering with AT&T and other data snoops to erect, quote, smart billboards that will know and record when you drive or walk past one. Using your own mobile phone, they can then follow your travel patterns and consumer behavior. Aggregating that information with other available data, Clear Channel can then know the average age and gender of passersby who see an ad on a particular billboard and know whether they later make purchases. It's, quote, a bit creepy, says Andy Stevens, and he works for Clear Channel. He's the corporation's vice president for, quote, research and insights. So Stevens rationalizes the zippy new ever-watching Orwellian billboard as just another step into the digital future. We're just tapping into an existing data system, he shrugs, noting that the millions of profiles collected by Clear Channel is, quote, obviously very valuable to an advertiser. This is Jim Hightower saying, and even more valuable to us persons who treasure our privacy and have given no permission to be targeted and tracked by a billboard huckster. And we thought government spying was out of control. For information on corporate snooping, go to epic.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. or leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.